From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present a previously recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Eric Castle, author of Animal Algorithms, Evolution and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of the Hank Unplugged podcast. We are committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet directly to your earbuds. And today is no exception. We've been doing this for a long time, but I am so excited about the podcast today. Before I introduce my guest for today's podcast, I want to mention something that kept going through my head as I began reading his book, and it is the statement of King Solomon. The wisest man who ever lived said, "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares its food in the summer and gathers its provision in the harvest." So here you have King Solomon telling you to get off the couch, get outside, and observe ants. So what in the world can you learn from an ant? Well, we're going to find out today what you can learn from the ingenious, complex program behaviors of ants. My guest today is Eric Castle. He is an expert in navigation systems. He has had a longtime interest in animal navigation and has more than 40 years of experience in systems engineering, which is directly related to aircraft navigation and safety. Eric has served as an engineering consultant for NASA and the Federal Aviation Administration and has developed computer algorithms for safety systems. Now, algorithms is a very important word. We're going to be talking about algorithms because the title of his book is Animal Algorithms, Evolution and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts. And before I get to Eric, I was fascinated as I was reading through the endorsements for this book to run across a man by the name of Gunther Beckley, who does this stirring endorsement. I won't read the whole endorsement, but in essence, what he says is that this book, the book we're going to be talking about today, is another welcome and highly recommended step toward an overdue paradigm change in modern biology. Now, that's quite a mouthful. And particularly when you start to realize who Gunther Beckley is, he's a German paleoentomologist who specializes in the fossil history and systematics of insects. And he's worked as a curator in the Department of Paleontology at the State Museum of Natural History in Stuttgart, Germany. And the reason this endorsement is so stunning is in 2009, which was the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth, Beckley curated a museum exhibit that featured not only Darwin's work, but also books by intelligent design theorists. And he cleverly featured a balance scale. On one side, you had Darwin's Origin of Species all by itself. On the other side, you had the intelligent design books written by a wide variety of authors. So you had all these books on one side, and then you had Darwin's Origin of Species on the other. And his point was that Darwin's Origin of Species outweighed everything else. But here you now have an ID skeptic who's endorsing this incredible book. So he was a former ID skeptic. He is now endorsing the work of Eric Castle. Eric, it is great to have you on the podcast today. I was so fascinated by your book because you're taking things that we ought to be observing and you're making these things observable in the sense that you're explaining things that we don't normally see.
Well, thanks, Hank, for having me on the program. Yes, that was one of the aspects that attracted me and encouraged me to write the book from that aspect was that many of the things that are discussed in the book are things that are easily observable today. They don't rely so much, for example, on the fossil record, things that may have happened millions of years in the past. These are behaviors that animals exhibit that, again, are very easily observable.
And you start with an ant. And if we observe an ant like Solomon told us to observe an ant, we see that they have phenomenal navigation skills. And yet they have a brain smaller than a sesame seed. And with this brain, they perform extraordinary mental feats. Give us some kind of a sense of what happens when you watch an ant and you really observe what that ant is doing.
Well, there's actually two different aspects of ant behavior that are discussed in the book. One is the social behaviors that you hinted about a minute ago, and those are complex because the ants live in these highly complex social colonies and exhibit a lot of different behaviors, and so there's complexity in how those behaviors are controlled. The other aspect is some particular ants and their navigation abilities. And what I describe in the book is how, in particular, this one ant that's called a desert ant, that lives in the, as the name implies, the deserts in Africa, that have navigation systems that rival the systems that we use on commercial aircraft today. And they use a number of different sensors, as do our aircraft systems, and they employ complex algorithms to guide their navigation system. It really is amazing when you compare the two side by side.
You also talk about leaf cutter ant colonies, and you say that's your favorite, one of the seven wonders of the animal world.
Yeah, the leaf cutters are, again, it's another behavior that when you examine it closely, it's ants that are working together in unison to cut down leaves and transport them to their home nests. And it's a process that involves, again, the ants in the colony working together in unison. It's not just some solitary ant out there doing these behaviors. They somehow, and we don't understand how, actually, how they coordinate all that complex activity.
And you have ants that live in trees that are able to take growing leaves without taking them away from the tree at all. They're growing. They take those leaves and they're able to glue them together. And if the leaves are jagged, have jagged edges, they're able to trim them and then make a nest that is about the size of a soccer ball, something like that. I mean, that's an incredible thing if you see them doing this in a social behavior and then engineering something that is absolutely astounding.
Right, yeah. Again, it's a social behavior that involves activities amongst the ants in the colony working together, and the ants you're talking about are weaver ants. And the aspect that you touched on briefly, to me, is the most fascinating and challenging from a scientific point of view, is how to explain how ants and other animals, other insects that I talk about, with such tiny brains are able to exhibit such complex behaviors. It's well beyond anybody's ability to understand at this point in time how that is even possible.
And yet there is an explanation that is given in the neo-Darwinian mind. It's an unguided, purposeless process that leads us to these complex programmed behaviors.
Well, exactly. I mean, that is the reigning paradigm in biology, that it's all due to, you know, just random mutations and natural selection, and that process is capable of generating not just complex biological systems physically, but also complex biological behaviors. And that includes, again, these behaviors occurring in such tiny brains. Now, you can take that Darwinian paradigm and think, okay, that's somewhat plausible, but when you examine how these behaviors occur, to me, there's several different aspects to this that are very mysterious. One, what is the origin of the information that even defines the behaviors in the first place? That's a major challenge for a Darwinian point of view.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Eric Castle. How do some birds, turtles, and insects process navigational abilities that rival the best man-made navigational technologies? Who or what taught the honeybee its dance? Or its hive mates how to read the complex message of the dance? How do blind mound-building termites master passive heating and cooling strategies that dazzle skilled human architects? In The Origin of Species, Charles Darwin conceded that such instincts are, quote, so wonderful that the mystery of their origin would strike many as a difficulty sufficient to overthrow my whole theory. In Animal Algorithms, Eric Castle surveys recent evidence and concludes that the difficulty remains, and indeed is a far more potent challenge to evolutionary theory than Darwin imagined. The best explanation is intelligent design. To receive your copy of Animal Algorithms, Evolution and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts by Eric Castle, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More details Hank Hanegraaff's personal pilgrimage from his long defense of truth to his discovery that life matters more. Essentially two books in one, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. Part 2 explains why truth is necessary, but hardly sufficient. That the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We are created to experience life to the full through union with God in Christ. Is there more to the Christian life than what you are experiencing? Truth Matters, Life Matters More unveils the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More for yourself or as a terrific gift to a friend or loved one, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us online at equip.org.
Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Eric Cassel, as they continue their conversation.
To me, there's several different aspects to this that are very mysterious. One, what is the origin of the information that even defines the behaviors in the first place? That's a major challenge for a Darwinian point of view. Second, how are those behaviors and this information contained in the genome? That's something that is very mysterious, and we understand very little at this point about that. And then third, how are those behaviors and that information somehow encoded in these brains, and again, in such tiny brains with such efficiency? You must have an extremely efficient neural network that somehow takes that information and encodes that behavior into the brain.
Yeah, and it's not just ants. I mean, there's so many things we ought to be observing. Another one of the tiny animals that you talk about in your book is the honeybee. And they have an amazing mini brain as well. And through that small brain, they are able to do these complex behaviors that include navigation, which is astounding. And I think perhaps the most astounding thing that you point to is the waggle dance of the honeybee, the second most information-rich exchange in the animal world, second only to human language. I mean, that's astounding in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an observation that scientists have made for quite a while, going back to the scientists that originally discovered that, Carl von Frisch. And what they're indicating is that the information that's contained in what is essentially a communication system where ants are able to communicate with each other, defining navigation information, you know, where to search for food, where to go look for another nest. There's a significant amount of information contained in the waggle dance, and they are able to communicate it. Again, this is something that's taking place between animals with extremely tiny brains, but it's all encoded into those brains somehow and transmitted, again, genetically from, you know, from one generation to the next. And again, you get back to the same question: what is the origin of the information that defines all of that? And that is a major mystery.
I mean, this waggle dance gives you direction, gives you distance. It conveys where the food source is and the distance it takes to get to the food source. I mean, it's just absolutely astounding. And you also write about the Arctic tern. And I think this is particularly intoxicating when you stop to think about the fact that an Arctic tern might travel as many as 30,000 miles and over a lifetime, maybe a million miles. Talk about a frequent flyer.
Exactly. Yeah, the tern and a number of other birds do these significantly long distance migrations, many of them going from one pole to the other on the Earth annually. And one of the challenges about such behaviors from an engineering and navigation point of view is how do they do these migrations so accurately? And we've learned a lot over the last couple of decades about the navigation abilities of a number of different animals, including many of the migrating birds. But we still don't really understand completely how that information is contained in the genome. For example, many of these migrations are inherited. So somehow they arose in the past, we don't know how, and that destination for the migration is contained, we believe. Again, that's really kind of conjecture at this point, but the assumption is it is contained in the genome and then transmitted to their offspring. And so in the case of birds, when they're hatched, they actually have that information, and they were able to migrate to a specific destination without learning anything, without any information being conveyed from the parents. They are just born knowing where to migrate to. It is just, it's just astonishing.
Did Darwin know anything about genetics?
Well, no, of course not. He was well before Mendel and the work that went on later on about genetics. So he really didn't know much of anything about how genetics worked.
Is that giving Darwin a bit of a pass? I mean, at least you can understand how he would have come up with a theory, or popularized a theory, I should say. And if he had known about genetics, perhaps he would have modified his view somewhat.
Well, I think that's certainly true, because he got a number of things wrong in terms of genetics specifically. For example, it wasn't just him, but other scientists of that era believed in the blending of characteristics, where they thought that a particular characteristic would be transmitted in sexual reproduction from the two parents, that those characteristics would blend in some way in the offspring. Well, of course, following the work of Mendel, we learned that that's not the case. So he was really off on that aspect of genetics. Another aspect that I don't think, and biologists acknowledge that that's the case, that Darwin obviously was ignorant about that, but so were many other people at that time. Another interesting aspect related to genetics is so-called Lamarckian evolution. So that's a theory that so-called acquired characteristics, where an animal could acquire a particular characteristic during their lifetime and then transmit that to their offspring. And it had some support at the time of Darwin. In fact, even after Darwin, some people continued to believe in that. Darwin actually was a big advocate of that. In The Origin of Species, he actually writes about that and provides support for that point of view a number of different times, and in particular, in relation to animal behaviors. He thought Lamarckism was actually a potential explanation for the way a number of animal behaviors might have developed over time and evolved. So again, but that's an area that it's interesting to me as I did the research for this book, to find that biologists have completely overlooked that aspect of Darwin's point of view, that he actually did become an advocate for Lamarckism, and again, particularly in regard to behaviors. But of course, that was pretty soundly discredited eventually also.
Yeah. Why did you focus on less advanced animals? I mean, what was the reason that that's your focus in this book?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah. And the simple reason is because there's a big difference between behaviors that are instinctual or innate. In other words, a behavior that an animal might exhibit almost from the moment of birth, versus behaviors that require some learning. So more advanced animals, i.e. mammals, for example, have brains that are large enough and are able to learn a significant number of things over time and learn behaviors. Whereas what I wanted to focus on was behaviors that are essentially programmed into the animal's behavior repertoire almost from the moment of birth. And so by doing that, it removed any possible explanation of the role of learning for these behaviors, in that they have to be, and then pretty much I was trying to focus on behaviors that, again, are innate, and so therefore they must be pre-programmed in some way.
You've sort of done this already, but perhaps you can really zero in on this moniker. If you read your book, one of the things that you come away with is three words that are imprinted on the canvas of your consciousness: complex programmed behaviors. Unpack that a little more for those listening in, because I think this would be an incentive for people to read this book.
Yes, that's the term that I use throughout the book, complex program behavior. And the reason is, again, I wanted to focus on certain kinds of behaviors that had a characteristic that indicated that there was some programming aspect to it that weren't just simple behaviors. So, for example, take the word complex. That I want to distinguish those from simple behaviors that are basically just reflexes. Or in psychologist terms, they talk about Pavlovian type of behaviors where there's a stimulus and then a response. Again, those are, for the most part, those tend to be simple behaviors. I wanted to steer clear of that and talk about behaviors that were more complex than that.
Well, we'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Eric Castle. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Animal Algorithms, Evolution and the Mysterious Origin of Ingenious Instincts by Eric Castle. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. Of course, you can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.